Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, Public Radio's Game with Words, where all participants are required to take one pledge.
As long as you have a tooth in your head, this person is going to work for you.
And the whole enterprise, led by a host who, well, how best to describe the host?
Sniveling criminal mind, low life, hypocrite.
Smarmy.
Smarmy, yeah, he was smart.
It's all right, we'll wait.
But the real stars of the show are the questions, difficult queries designed to reveal the origins of our words and legends.
When Gretel left Hansel...
Yes?
She was disgruntled.
I wanted to see where it was going, and I'm frankly disappointed.
No,
I'm So be prepared to be unprepared for Says You. Next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Amid criticism of Algeria's response to the hostage crisis at the natural gas facility in the Sahara, President Obama says he's seeking a fuller understanding of what happened, but he's blaming the deaths of at least 23 hostages on the Islamist militants who attacked the complex. And British Prime Minister David Cameron agrees.
The responsibility for these deaths lies squarely with the terrorists who launched this vicious and cowardly attack. And I'd also say that when you're dealing with a terrorist incident on this scale, with up to 30 terrorists, it is extremely difficult to respond and to get this right in every respect.
More than 30 militants were killed after Algerian special forces stormed the complex yesterday. There are reports of more bodies being found today as military teams searched for explosives planted by the militants. President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden honored the nation's fallen soldiers today. They laid a wreath at Arlington National Cemetery shortly after Biden was sworn into a second term. The president will be sworn in later this morning at the White House in a private ceremony as police officers and National Guard troops from around the country in Washington for tomorrow's public inauguration. NPR's Brian Naylor reports security will be tight, though crowds are expected to be smaller than 4 years ago.
Some 1.8 million people attended the president's first inauguration, and officials are expecting less than half that this time. But security will be no less stringent. Some 42 law enforcement agencies, from the Secret Service, which is in overall charge of security, to the U.S. Park Police, will be monitoring activities from a command post set up in a Washington suburb. They'll be using social media in hopes of avoiding communication snafus, such as occurred 4 years ago when thousands of inaugural ticket holders were trapped in a tunnel and missed the ceremony. Brian Naylor, NPR News, Washington.
The Federal Reserve has released transcripts of Fed meetings that show how the central bank responded to the recession. The transcripts show that through much of 2007, policymakers underestimated the dangers looming for the U.S. economy. As NPR's John Isty reports, the transcripts released after a five-year delay.
The housing market had already begun its downturn when Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke said at the Fed's March 2007 meeting that it was likely that housing would stabilize sometime during the middle of the year. Bernanke's public comments reflected that same lack of alarm. Of course, the housing market plunged. Dallas Fed President Richard Fisher began sounding the alarm at the May meeting, saying he was very bearish on the housing front and that big builders in his district were telling him the reality is worse than the headlines. By December, Janet Yellen, now vice chairman of the Fed, said the risk of recession no longer seems remote. Indeed, the Great Recession had begun, as had historic efforts by the Fed to stabilize the economy. John Idsty, NPR News.
This is NPR. State media in Iran say two men were hanged publicly today after a video posted on YouTube apparently showed them robbing and assaulting a man on a street in Tehran. The video was later shown on state television. It shows four masked men on motorcycles approaching the victim. Two take part in the assault, and one of the attackers appears to be wielding a machete. The execution of the men was carried out after officials called for a speedy investigation and trial because of public outrage. NATO Chief Anders Fogh Rasmussen says there is no sign that the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad is using chemical weapons. But as Terry Schultz reports from Brussels, Rasmussen says Damascus still poses a serious threat.
NATO's detected the launch of more than 20 ballistic missiles inside Syria. But so far, Secretary General Rasmussen says, there's no sign any of them have been equipped with chemical weapons. The Obama administration also rebutted reports the Syrian government has used chemical agents against its citizens. But Rasmussen says that doesn't allay concerns for Turkey.
Obviously, the existence of chemical weapons is a matter of great concern to us. We consider the threat a real threat, and this is a reason why we have decided to deploy the Patriot missiles.
NATO's Patriot anti-missile systems are currently being set up in areas near the Turkish border by the U.S., Germany, and the Netherlands. Rasmussen says they'll be operational within days. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
The weather in Europe making air travel problematic. London's Heathrow Airport, one of the continent's busiest, says it has canceled 20% of its usual schedule because of snow and low visibility. Today is the third day of flight disruptions at Heathrow. It spent millions on winter weather equipment since 2010 when it was heavily criticized for weather disruptions. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need, on the web at rwjf.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You at Syracuse comes from the good folks at Syracuse University, the WRVO stations in Syracuse and Oswego, and the Genesee Grand Hotel, where Says You stays in Syracuse and on the web at GeneseeGrand.com.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
Thank you. Thank you. From the Hendricks Chapel on the campus of Syracuse University in Syracuse, New York, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. He's a square guy, a straight arrow, who somehow managed to avoid prism. Tony Khan. Jeez. She's a paragon of virtue. Or is that a polygon? Lenore Shannon. And he comes from the land of oval offices and pentagons, where they just aren't hitting on all cylinders. Mr. Murray Horowitz. And who's going to step up?
I will attempt to be virtuous in my choices.
Our paragon.
Lenore will be the captain. To my left, team two, he's a model for us all to follow, if we follow at a safe distance. Arnie Reisman. She's an example for all the kids out there. All the kids who think that sassy is the way to go. Carolyn Faye Fox. And she's the standard by which our conduct should be measured, our gauge, our scale, our ruler, Miss Paula Lyons.
Okay.
Who steps up this week?
Arnie.
I will.
Arnie will step up this week. Correct answers are worth 10 points, so whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate, we always advise new listeners, grab a pen and paper. Let's begin with a round of definitions and derivations. For 5 points, define, and for an additional 5, try to divine the origins of the following common words and phrases. Carolyn, disgruntled.
Disgruntled, put out, not happy, discontented, mumbling, grumbling.
That's 5 points.
All right.
Only apply to office seekers.
When Gretel left Hansel...
Yes.
She was disgruntled.
I wanted to see where it was going, and I'm frankly disappointed.
No,
I
we were wondering if you could be gruntled, as well as disgruntled.
You used to be.
Really? Oh, really? You used to be gruntled.
You used to be gruntled.
Were you once shoveled?
I don't think so. I've never been shoveled in
I've
my
never
whole
been shoveled.
Life.
If
no.
once you could have been gruntled, does this have anything to do with pigs?
It has everything to do with pigs.
All
10
right.
points. Very good. Nice job.
Very good.
You want to flesh it out just for the sake of the audience?
Well, I would guess that a pig could be disgruntled if it learned of its future.
Yes. A pig, it does come from the English barnyard, coming from the word grunt as right. the sound that yeah. swine make. A gruntle was a diminutive grunt, and it became a disparaging term for a complaint. And dis as a prefix merely intensified the term, and somewhere around the 17th or 18th century, gruntled became disgruntled.
So that's interesting, because you would think that disgruntled would mean to be to have your small grunt removed.
Yes, right. you would.
Yes.
I think I'm just going to let that one go.
Yeah, do that.
Okay.
All right, try this one, Tony. Definition and derivation of watershed event.
Watershed what?
Watershed event or watershed
Oh, watershed event. It was kind of like the tipping point of something where the thing that makes something be truly and fully itself happens, and it changes something,
change.
Right? So big changing dramatic event.
That's 5 points.
Okay.
That's
so true. Watershed would be perhaps when, as the tidal wave begins to crest over your garage, and you know it's a little too late to do much more than pray. That's the origin. Has no. something to do with flooding?
No, it has.
No, no, no. Does it have to do with a watershed?
Well, only in the metaphorical sense that yes, that's where the heavy rain in the mountains leads to flooding in the valley.
I see a dog drying itself off after coming out of a lake.
No.
Well, I can't help it. I do.
I understand. this actually owes to a certain language. If it
Watershed.
Yes.
Watershed. So German.
It is German.
Wasserscheidheit. When eine Wasserscheidheit gemischt ist, der Feind ist ihr von einer machen.
10 points. That's exactly right.
Thank you. Bitte sehen.
Yeah.
Bitte sehen.
Do you know what it is? Obviously, Wasser. You know what the other German word involved is? The shed part of it?
No, I don't know.
Well, divide.
Right. Yeah, divide.
Yeah, for water and divide, because it's a dividing point. A watershed moment means something profound has changed with consequences such as a heavy rain flooding into a valley.
I think that's what a watershed is, right? But geologists in the audience can let me know if I'm right or wrong.
Try this one, Arnie. Definition and derivation of comeuppance.
Comeuppance. You've been had, basically, and you deserve to be had. Someone or something has gotten back at you for doing wrong or
That's
misleading.
5 points. That's right.
So
exactly
a
right.
comeuppance. Boy, it really sounds like it was British once. Huh?
It yes, was British
because
once.
Because tuppence
yeah.
and all of
well,
that.
Well, just it's adding an unce onto it. You know, come up. You're
well,
you're,
come
you've
up is really up. To the point.
Yeah, you've been brought up
short.
Brought up short. Yeah, you've been brought up.
You've been brought up somewhere, but you've been brought up somewhere specific.
On charges.
You have
well,
been
charges.
Brought up on charges.
Charges.
That's exactly right. You have come up before a
the
judge.
Court. Yeah.
Ah.
And that's where it comes from.
Fun.
This word for the consequences a person who has transgressed or eventually mm-hmm. faces is derived from the words come up, literally meaning coming up before a judge oh, to right. face the legal music. I love this one, Lenore. Give this one a shot. Definition and derivation of indentured servant.
An indentured servant is someone that is paid very little, paid or paid nothing at all, and is expected to perform to every moment of your life is cared for and provided by your indentured.
Well, no, for a term. First day
that's exactly
for
right. That's, well, that's well, the well, 5 points. It's
for
so,
a term.
And that's very much to the point. Okay.
Until you need false teeth.
Well, he didn't let me get to the teeth part.
Yes. And what is the teeth part?
Well, as long as you have a tooth in your head, this person is going to work for you. Indentured servitude. So it does have something to do with teeth.
It does. And you're going to love this when you hear it. You're
so,
going to love the answer.
So,
I guess Tony could, or...
No, I agree with Murray. It totally defines my relationship to my dentist these days. I am supporting every member of his family through the...
Well, right, and that would have something to do with it, maybe? Is that...
Having to do with biting?
Owe the dentist money for with taking a mark? Out your teeth?
It has to... You're right.
Biting?
So it was expensive. So poor people had to serve other people because in order to get dental work done.
No,
but they...
Nothing to do with dental work.
Did they take your teeth out if you left early?
No, they did not. Ooh.
Oh, how awful.
Gosh.
There's a nice image to go home with,
Lawrence,
don't you?
Lawrence Olivier.
That's happening. I'm leaving.
Boom! It has something to do with biting, Murray. It's something to do with biting.
It does have something to do with biting.
Is the servant the bitten one?
No, that's not what you bite. Does the
the bite like horse, the thing where you're basically like a horse, you have a thing in your teeth.
You know what I mean.
We've gone so far astray.
Is it like making your ex because they bit something to sign the contract?
Do you know something? They finally got there.
Your teeth as a seal.
That is exactly right. Very good, Murray. An indenture was a contract, and the name derives from teeth, because when one wanted to provide authentication for a copy of a document, they would stack up the two and tear a piece off from both so it could be matched up later. And that rip looked like teeth marks.
Oh.
And that's where it comes from.
That is an amazing answer.
Yeah.
And that is really what this show is all about.
10 points.
You don't know the answer and you hear it, and it's an amazing answer.
Try this one, Paula. Definition and derivation of clothes horse.
Guilty. Well, it refers usually to a woman, but it can sometimes refer to a man. It's someone who loves clothes and buys them and likes to be up to date and wears them well and all that other good stuff.
Yes.
Is this have something to do with show horses?
No, it
no,
does not.
No, really? Hmm. Clothes horse, does it have to do with the mannequins that clothing is shown on?
No, not mannequins.
Does it have to do with thoroughbreds and their racing silks?
Well, that's what I was getting at.
No, nothing whatsoever.
Not the aspect of parading?
No. Has absolutely nothing to do with a horse at all.
Does it have to do with sawhorses?
In a way, yes.
Sawhorse.
Does it mean that you've got a little a rack someplace that you can constantly put clothes on top of, and that because you're buying so much?
Not only do you have that rack, clothes horse is a proper noun.
Oh,
it is actually a proper noun of an English
like a copyright
creation
trademark
in the mid 1800s. Uh-huh. It comes from the mid 1800s and was the proper name for the wooden racks that were sold and used to dry or air out one's clothes. Though it was
that
called
was a clothes horse.
The clothes horse.
Wow.
And that's pretty good. We'll give you, what do you think, 8 points for that? They eventually got to the clothes horse, so 8 points for that. And Murray, definition and derivation of dop kit.
Dop, oh, I know this.
You do?
I know this, yeah. Because it's a couple of states away in, I think, Mansfield, Ohio, where the Doppelt family invented a toilet kit. And I know that because my cousin Joni was married to a Doppelt.
You're kidding.
No, I swear to God.
Well, that got you 10 points. Cousin Joni came through that time.
But a dop kit originally was for a man's toiletries. Yeah. It was not, but now it's sort of... You know, universal, everyone uses a dop kit, but it was originally for...
I never actually used to ask you the definition. Yes, I was stunned.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so that's it's a small leather bag for holding shaving items or toiletries, of course, from Charles Doppelt and Company. It's actually a Chicago leather goods manufacturer, but I'm sure they have offices everywhere.
It's a small leather bag, but it's a very extended family.
Very good, Murray. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little help from the Setnor School of Music Saxophone Ensemble. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing Rounds. Arnie, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The others have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Lenore's team. 10 points up for grabs to Lenore if she can find the bluffer, or to you, Arnie, if she can't. take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word furphy. F-U-R-P-H-Y, furphy. Folks? Says You makes its sesquiannual return to Seattle, Washington, as part of this spring schedule of live performances. On June 22nd and 23rd, we'll become Soulcesters, as we once again invade Town Hall with special guests and musical surprises. Tickets, information, and details for these matinees are available, of course, at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. Where if you follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. Other dates for this spring will be posted in the next few days on the site, and we hope you'll keep your eyes peeled to see if this is the year you'll be able to catch a live performance of the show. And who knows, maybe we'll find out who first peeled one's eyes. Says You returns after this from home. Enjoy, Says You. You can listen here each week, as we hope you do. You can attend a live performance or download any show in our archive. You can contribute a question to the show and achieve limited fame with a small but dedicated audience. And now there's the book, Says Us, Volumes 1 and 2, a tome of games for family and fellow travelers. All this and more at saysyou.net. S-A-Y-S Y-O-U. That is the Setnor School of Music Saxophone Ensemble. Thank you very much, folks. Can you once again introduce yourselves?
Iris Pachenik.
Matthew Berger.
Dejon James.
James Albison.
Robert Taylor.
David Carpenter.
Rob Rahan.
Juliana Mateko.
Dan Sclafani.
Christopher Jabat.
Justin Burke.
Okay.
We're getting faster.
Did you notice how Justin even orchestrated that? Did you see that? That was good. Thank you, Justin.
Tempo.
We have had a few moments with the word furphy. We will go first to Carolyn Fay Fox.
Furphy. It's an Irish Furby. No, it isn't. You may have seen something like this on Hoarders. If you watch that, it's a really bad situation because a furphy is a refrigerator filled with decaying food, spoiled milk, moldy cheese, and the like. It refers to the furry substance that coats all the surfaces. Furphy.
Furphy, yes. It could be what you find in a disgusting refrigerator, or it could be something else. What say you, Arnold?
It looks to me like it may be the act you got into after you've open such a refrigerator, because it seems to be some kind of slang noun, or from, I don't know what language this is, but it's the act of walking in circles and pacing while pondering, to be in an animated, anxious state while solving a problem.
Pacing and pondering is the furphy.
But it's a noun, yeah.
Oh, it's a noun. You're in a furphy.
In a furphy.
Oh, yeah, okay. That could be it. Or it could be something else. What say you, Paula?
Well, I mean, really, a furphy is just nothing more than a rumor, a false report. For example, it's nothing but a furphy.
A rumor, a
false report.
A false report could be a furphy. It could be that pacing and pondering and indecision that Arne talked about. Or it could be what you find when you open that disgusting refrigerator door. It's one of those three, and the choice is yours, Lenore.
Oh, well, what a terrible three choices
to
have to have.
Not a great choice, I have to say.
Walking in circles to solve a problem just doesn't seem like you'd make that up to go with furphy. I don't know why that struck me as being perhaps... There may be something there. Gentlemen, what do you think?
That's a really good reason. It'll make you look good even if you're wrong.
Right.
That would be one thing. A rumor, a furphy, a rumor or a false report. What do you think? No?
I don't know.
Murray?
I have to tell you, I have so many jokes for this word, but not one of them is in good taste, and I feel like...
You're in church.
Right.
Remind you where you are.
I don't know.
I respect your choice.
Yes.
The act of walking around. You're in a furphy estate.
Yeah, that was my first thought.
So why don't we try that and hope for the best? What do is that? How does that sound? All right. Let us have it then.
So your choice is Mr. Reisman.
Oh. Yes.
You think that furphy is a state of pondering and pacing. Is that, in fact, Arnold, what it is?
Well, it's close. That's what I was doing when I was trying to create a definition.
That was a bluff. All right, audience, it's your turn. What do you think? How many say the disgusting refrigerator? How many say the false rumor? Whoa.
How many have a disgusting refrigerator?
Yes.
Does anyone know definitely what it is?
No, I guess not.
No, not a soul.
Well, Paula, right. I don't think it's even close. This audience really goes for the false rumor, the false report of the rumor. Is that, in fact, what a furphy is?
Furphy, a false report, a rumor.
It is, exactly. 10 points for the audience. And for Arnold Reisman's team. Let's go on to round three. We tried this once before, but I'm going to try it again because now it's much better. So don't panic. It's much better than it used to be.
What is?
Let's go on to round three. What the Dickens? Charles Dickens gave us many characters so vividly drawn that their names have become nouns and adjectives describing people with their essential qualities. For example, calling someone a Scrooge is to call them a misanthropic miser. We'll give you the character name and novel in which it appears. You give us the characteristic definition. Carolyn,
yes.
The noun bumbledom, as in Mr. Bumble from Oliver Twist, infers what set of character flaws?
Bumbledom?
Yes.
Somebody who bumbles around and kind of bounces off the walls and never really gets anything done and is sort of haphazard and
maybe they walk in circles.
Maybe they walk in circles
before falling down.
Well, what do you think? 7 points so far?
Yeah,
Seven points so far, but I think any hope from the other side?
It's got to be an authority figure, I think.
That's exactly right. It's
He was the Beetle, Mr. Bumble the Beetle.
Mr. Bumble the Beetle is correct. It's the rigidity and incompetence of a petty official. Mm. That's what bumbledom is, and 7 points for that.
Strange we don't hear it more.
Yeah, really.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. 7 points for that. Try this one, Tony. William Micawber in David Copperfield lends his name to a person who is what?
This was W.C. Fields in the movie.
It was so W.C. Fields.
Yeah,
he's a
dipsomaniac.
No, he's a what do I want to say? Not a shyster, but he's a crook. He's a scam artist. I think he's a,
not really. Not in the book. He was much more so in the movie. I know that, but they did take a few liberties.
He seemed to be benevolent.
Yes,
right?
He did.
But was impoverished. I mean, he didn't have anything to help with.
Really. You know something? One more thing and you got the 10 points. One more element and you got the 10 points.
Ooh. What have we got so far as his leading
poor
character?
Poor but benevolent. Yeah, and old?
No.
What did he...
I'm going to give you the 7 points so far. There's one element missing. Anybody on the other side?
Loving but incoherent.
No.
No, but wasn't he manipulative, too? I mean,
well,
he had an overly high opinion of himself, didn't he, for all of his impoverishment and seeming benevolent.
It's not an overly...
Benevolent.
Well, that's a long way there, but he was optimistic. He was almost blindly optimistic.
Oh, right. Prosperity was just around the corner.
Exactly. And that was the missing element. But 7 points for you guys, and nice job on that. Try this one, Arnie. The pejorative labeling of someone as a Uriah Heep.
Just
means they are what?
Sniveling criminal mind, low life.
Hypocrite.
One other element, too, just another.
Smarmy,
yeah.
I got to go with smarmy. That's
dark,
10 points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's unctuous.
He's
obsequious.
I'm a very humble man, he used to say. Humble.
That's right. It's the fawning, the sycophantic kind of. Obsequiousness.
Tony nailed. He said unctuous.
Oh yeah, nice. Very nice. But we gave him 10 points, so we'll generous with you guys. Try this one, Lenore. From Great Expectations, a Havisham is what?
Miss Havisham.
Well, Miss Havisham was, of course, abandoned at the altar and never got over it. So a Havisham is a someone whose fiancé has ditched them. They're left at the altar. Is that it? Is it more
than
that?
That's it. And of course, in the future, they became...
Reclusive, old maid.
They became reclusive. Yeah. Very good. Nice job. It's a bitter, jilted bride who becomes a recluse, is a Havisham. Yeah. And try this one. These last two are really hard, but give it a shot. See how we go. Paula, a grad grind from Hard Times.
A what?
A grad grind, GRADGRIND, from Hard Times, is a very evocative word for what kind of a person?
A grad grind from Hard Times. That's the one book I never read. But
he was money grubbing.
He was, that's true, very avaricious. You again,
well,
you're
highly, overly disciplined, sort of doctrinaire, and
crushed the spirits of students.
You know, he really did. Yeah. I have to say, we'll give you 7 points for that. Any help from the other side? Any thoughts?
Crushed
no,
the spirits.
No, I was neither
of
a grind nor a grad, so I don't. You know.
Well, the notorious headmaster was a cold and unsympathetic, dedicated to profit. That was the real thing.
Yep.
Interested in facts, not human emotions, and tough on students in that regard. So we'll give you 7 points. Nice job. And we'll go to you, Murray, to say, to be a Pecksniff.
Pecksniff.
From Martin Chuzzlewit is to be a what?
Oh, boy. Pecksniff. I
have to admit, I never read Martin Chuzzlewit. So this is...
Pecksniff?
Me neither.
A Pecksniff. Yeah.
Sniff.
Right?
Oh,
is it somebody looking for opportunity?
Oh boy, is he ever? Yeah, in a way, yeah, you could
is
say that.
Is he looking for a wealth? Is it a he?
Yes.
Is he looking for a wealthy woman to wed?
It was Seth, right? Seth Pecksniff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Say that 3 times fast.
Seth Pecksniff. Seth, but fine.
Told you. He's not looking for a dowry.
Well, yes, in a way. I think I'm comfortable with the 7 points. Any help from the other side? Any help from the audience?
No.
Well, in a way, he is, according to the description we wrote, a greedy type who would steal... He was an architectural... He taught architecture. He was a greedy type who would steal ideas from his students and pass them off as his own.
Oh.
ingratiate himself with wealthy benefactors, hypocritical, preachy, you know, that type of thing. So 7 points, and thank you very much, you guys. It was a pleasure to give you the Dickens. Nice job. This week's Spotlight Round comes at the request of Carl Cartwright, lately of Columbus, Ohio. Carl writes, I love your pun rounds, and I almost always get them, but I remember one of the first times you did cities, my hometown was one of the answers, and I didn't get it. I enclose that town here, I won't spoil it for others, for you to find the right show. And if you make it a Spotlight Round, maybe I'll get it this time. Well, Carl, we trace that moment back to our second season. A day when Barry Nolan and Francine Akbar joined us for a round of cryptic cities. From the convoluted clues and obscure references, please tell me what U.S. city is brought to mind by the following. An example, 2,000 pounds of laundry.
Washington.
Washington, yes.
It's actually 2,000 pounds of dirty laundry.
Yeah. Carolyn, try this one.
Okay.
Sell Miss Thurmond door to door.
Sell Miss Thurmond door to
Uma.
Uma.
Door to door.
Uma. What do you
what
say? Uma.
City
Fuller
is
Brush.
Brought to
Uma.
Mind.
City. Avon.
Sell
Uma.
Miss Thurmond
Girl Scout
door
cookie.
To door.
Petaluma.
Petaluma.
Thank you, Paula.
10 points.
Excellent.
Petal
Very
Uma.
Good.
Sell door to door Petal and Uma Thurmond Petaluma. Very good.
Who knows why?
Tony.
Sheboygan.
10 points. No matter what.
That's it.
Tony, brand name beach waffle.
Brand name beach waffle.
San Diego.
San Diego. That's San a legitimate Diego. 10 points of ever.
San Diego.
Ego.
Brand
Diego. All right.
Ego. Ego. San Diego.
You know, you gotta love it when the audience is mumbling and rolling their eyes. You know,
I would like an explanation.
A
please.
Brand name beach waffle is a Sandy Ego.
Sandy Ego. Sandy
Ego. And if you think all of that was bad, wait till you get this.
Oh, we will get it? Go ahead.
Arnie,
here it comes.
This starts playwright Edwards' vehicle.
Playwright Edwards.
This starts playwright Edwards' vehicle.
Okay, Edward Albee.
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 Mr. Nolan is writhing in pain on the other side.
Oh, you got it.
Good.
This starts his vehicle.
Albee. What would start a car? Key Albee? Albee Key? Albuquerque!
Albuquerque. Very good. Keep going. Albuquerque. Albuquerque.
This starts. Playwright Edwards' vehicle is Albee Carkey, Albuquerque.
Boy, did that hurt. Albee Carkey.
Francine, transgress repeatedly during the afternoon social.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. Hey.
10 points. Cincinnati is correct. Cincinnati. Very good.
Oh, gosh.
Paula, this one's miserably unfair. Hitters makeup, perhaps.
Hitters?
Yes. H-I-T-T-E-R apostrophe S. Hitters makeup.
Makeup.
Perhaps.
Hitters makeup. Base?
Audience.
Base? Is base in there?
Nope. The audience is...
Hitters makeup.
Hitters. What's a makeup? Baseball.
Battle Creek, Michigan. No.
Hitters makeup.
Well, you're.
Well, Ronnie,
you're
what do you call it when makeup? A hitter gets a makeup hit?
Bat.
What do you call
what?
That?
Bat.
Oh, I was thinking of foundation.
Batter's box.
Batter's.
Batter. It seemed to be coming a little.
Bat.
Coming
swing.
Up a little short here.
And batter.
Okay.
Any help from the other side?
Base.
May I turn?
Beige Ruth.
Beirut.
While you're getting there, how about I turn to the entire audience for
Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge, yes.
Oh.
Everybody got it.
You know, we're gonna have to change the format of this show.
That's right.
back to
Batting Rouge or Baton Rouge. Very good. And finally, Barry.
The audience didn't help. That was most unfair. All you had to do was whisper among yourselves. And I'd have gotten it. Now I know where to look.
And Barry, talk idly while blowing the car horn. Talk idly while blowing the car horn. Ooh, shh.
Yeah.
The audience.
Talk idly.
Something honking.
Wee honking.
Wee honking.
Wee honking.
Letting.
The other side knows this
honking.
One.
Honking. Is it honking?
No, it is not. Talk idly while blowing the car horn.
Chattanooga.
Chattanooga.
Chattanooga. 10 points. Very good. To talk idly while blowing the car horn is to chat and ooga. Chattanooga.
That's our spotlight round for this week. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. We'll send our crack staff into the archives and do our best to find your favorite. You can register your choice at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. That's our look back. Now, back to the present.
And let's go on to round four, which is Lenore's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff. 10 points, Arnold, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word agunah.
Agunah.
A-G-U-N-A-H. Agunah. Folks?
Here's a quick reminder. Says You's spring schedule of tapings will be posted on our site in the coming days, featuring stops from coast to coast. There's our wintry forays in the snow-covered hills of New England and our summer solstice stop in Seattle, Washington, for which tickets are now available. Check it out at saysyou.net and come join us for our special brand of wit and wordplay. Find out how, when, where, and why at saysyou.net. SAYSYOU. Briefly, Says You pauses, just long enough for a few interstitial announcements. We'll be right back. In print, Says Us, the scripts and quips of Says You, Volumes 1 and 2, feature games from our first two seasons on the air. They're perfect for evenings of parlor games with friends and family, and even better to keep the mind alive while you're winging high above pond and prairie. Picture this, you're driving to Cousin Luther's house and the kids are rearranging the back seat. Just pop out a quiz and minimize the damage. You have only to thank Says Us on our website at saysyou.net.
That is the Setnor School of Music Saxophone Ensemble. Thank you very much, folks, for giving us a lovely evening and a little time with the word agunah. We will go first to Tony Khan.
This great, I always thought it was a guna, but apparently it's not, and it's very sadly a contemporary. In the Mayan calendar, it is the final cycle before the end of time.
Gesundheit, sir.
Before the end of time. So in the Mayan calendar, it's the final cycle before the end of time, or approximately 6 weeks from last Tuesday, I think.
Okay. Agana is actually about 6 weeks from last Tuesday. The final cycle before the end of time in the Mayan calendar could be that, or it could be something else. What say you, Lenore?
You know, it's funny. This afternoon after we were shopping, I had to call my husband just to check in, and he noticed a lot of activity on the bank account, and I told him that everything that we bought was $20, but there was just so much of it. It made me wish that I might be this person, and that would be that, you know, that you would be a widow, but you couldn't get married again unless you could prove that you didn't have your other husband, that he was dead.
Say that again.
That you can't remarry. You have to prove that your husband is dead before you remarry. So it's like a widow of sorts, but you can't go back to...
Say that straight out.
It's a woman that can't get married again until she can prove that her husband is dead. Yeah.
You have to prove that your husband is dead, and then you
so
can
you're
get
calling
married
yourself
again.
A widow?
Yeah, so yes. He's not okay. Just sleeping.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. No, he always looks like that. Yeah.
A widow who has to prove her husband... Well, if she's a widow, her husband... A woman
well,
who
it's,
has
right.
to prove her husband is
you
dead...
You can't just call yourself a widow anymore.
Okay. You have to be an aguna. You have to prove your husband's dead. Or it could be something else. What say you, Murray?
Well, if you notice carefully...
Yes.
...the spelling of this word... Here, hope and bend. Do you have it? There you go. And you see, there is a tradition of taking the 8 candles and lighting them all, and then every night taking one away at the Festival of Lights. So it's Hanukkah spelled backwards, it's Agana. And that's no, I'm sorry. That's really not true. Although there is that tradition. It does come from the world of mysticism, and it's an evil spirit, a wraith or witch.
An evil spirit, a wraith, a witch. It's an aguna. That could be it. It could be the widow who has to prove that her husband is dead, or it can be the final cycle the final cycle before the end of time. It is one of those three, and the choice, Arnold, is yours.
Well, it does seem to have that sort of quality that it says it's something to do with woman. This whole idea of ending in A-H to me, I'm maybe winging it here, but... which could still be the spirit, and I don't think it's the Mayan calendar. I'm heading toward the widow who has to prove
her husband's dead.
That she, in fact, is a widow in order to remarry.
I think that's sort of perversely something Richard would pick.
It sounds like Richard.
I beg your pardon.
It's got that goon
it's
quality.
It's got that kind of, I like that definition.
Yeah.
Whether it...
It makes me think of the Monty Python dead parrot skit.
Right. Yeah.
Of course my husband's dead.
It's a late
he
parrot.
Ceased to be.
He is an ex-husband.
Right.
All of a sudden, I just flashed on an old Monty Python routine with they were doing a sketch to keep your pets, you know, entertained while you were away with the TV on, and they were doing Dickens for Budgies.
Oh, I think that's...
Remember that? And they were doing A Tale of Two Cities, and they were in full outfit, and they came out and go... It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the best of times. Can we go with Lenore?
We'll go with Lenore.
We're going with Lenore on that widow thing.
You're going to go with Lenore on the widow thing. Lenore, that team has decided that an aguna is a widow who has to convince people her husband is dead before she can remarry. Is that in fact what it is?
Aguna. A woman who may not remarry until she proves her husband is dead.
10 points.
I didn't do it.
For Arnie's pain.
Good.
Nice job. Let's close tonight. The 30-year period between 1939 and 1969 is often thought to be the golden age of cinema. It is from that era that Christopher Tully of Washington, D.C., raises a round called What a Character. From the following film characters, identify the famous film. Start with this one, Carolyn. Effie Perrine.
Oh, Maltese Falcon.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Oh, thanks, Arnie.
Will you give the radio audience a chance, please?
I'm double parked. Let's go.
Effie. I never got to Bridget O'Shaughnessy. I never got to Casper Gutman. I never got to, let alone Sam
Joel
Spade.
Yeah.
10 points for Effie Perrine. Very good.
Okay.
Try this one, Tony. Birdie.
Oh,
Birdie.
B-I-R-D-I-E. Birdie.
Yeah, is that Bye Bye Birdie?
It is not.
Oh, is it?
Is it British?
Oh, her head is in her hands, ladies and gentlemen.
Birdie.
It's a tough one.
Is it a British movie?
It is not a British movie, okay. Actually. To Birdie, add Lloyd Richards.
Lloyd Richards. I thought that was the name of an actor.
Yeah.
Lloyd Richards. My God, well, I'm seeing a society melodrama of some kind with Birdie as a female.
Well, yeah, it is a society melodrama.
Okay, so my father probably wrote it.
Oh, yeah.
It's not arsenic and old lady.
It is not.
Okay.
To Birdie and Lloyd Richards, add Addison DeWitt.
Oh, it's Laura. Is it Laura?
No.
It is not.
Oh, Addison DeWitt is...
Oh, they're killing themselves.
Oh, I know. Oh, is it All About Eve?
It's All About Eve. That's
right.
6
Addison
points.
Addison DeWitt was the right. Oh,
6
God.
Points. Very good. All About Eve. You didn't need Margot Channing. You didn't need Eve Harrington.
Okay.
All right. Try this one, Arnie. The movie that the first character, Zelda Zanders.
Ooh.
It got quiet there for a second. Zelda Zanders.
Zelda Zanders.
There was a girl in my high school class named Zelma Zettler. Zelma, if you're out there, wherever you are, Zelda write the show and let me know how you're doing.
Zelda Zanders.
Zelda Zanders. I don't think they're going to get
no.
it. To Zelda Zanders, we add R.F. Simpson.
R.F. Simpson.
R.F. Simpson.
Mm. Oh, you're going to kill yourself.
Oh,
you're
I'm sure.
Just going to kill yourself.
I'm sure. R.F. Simpson.
To Zelda Zanders and R.F. Simpson. To Zelda Zanders and R.F. Simpson, add Cosmo Brown.
Cosmo
Brown.
Oh,
right. Topper.
Okay.
No?
No. I got it. Yeah.
Cosmo
Brown?
Topper,
that was.
Huh. It's not. No.
And just the other side has it, of
I'm
course.
I'm sure they do.
As they always do. To Zelda Zanders, R.F. Simpson, and Cosmo Brown, add, wait till you hear this, Lena Lamont.
Oh, okay.
Singing in
Saddles?
The Rain.
Singing in, I'm sorry?
Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain.
Lena Lamont.
There you go.
And I can't stand him.
Yeah, that's right. You didn't need... You didn't need Don Lockwood. Points. They get 4 points for that.
You know, and his motto for his career is very similar to, could be used for Says You, dignity, always dignity.
Dignity, always dignity. I want my son to see that movie. Do you think he's 11 years old? Do you think he's ready for Singing in the Rain?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Make him laugh.
Especially Ben. Oh, yeah.
All right. Okay.
Donald O'Connor.
Try this one, Lenore. Movie, the first character, Eugene Grizzard.
Eugene Grizzard. All right. Well,
no,
I don't get it on that one.
No, to Eugene Grizzard, add C.W. Moss.
Oh.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Bonnie and
Clyde. I didn't get a chance to say it, but Bonnie and Clyde.
Bonnie and Clyde is exactly right. Do you know who played Eugene Grizzard?
Yes, Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder is exactly
that was a great
right. Very
role,
good,
yeah.
Arnold.
Yeah.
That's 8 points for that. Try this one, Paula. I don't
that
want
sounds
to do
evil.
It. I don't want to do it, but I have to.
Oh, you do.
Try this one, Paula. George Kaplan.
Oh, North by Northwest.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Thank you, darling.
You know what the worst part of it is? George Kaplan has never seen never or heard seen in the movie.
Right.
And he knew.
That's the, who they is.
They think he is.
That's who they think he is. Very good.
Such a great movie.
And finally, not too much at stake here except pride, but give
it
a shot, Murray.
We've none of that.
Yes. Give this one a shot.
Can you borrow a cup of pride from the other side?
Anytime.
Yes.
Thank you.
Try this one. Sheriff Heck Tate.
Sheriff Heck Tate. I'll bet it's a Western. This is a wild guess. High Noon.
Oh, it's not High Noon. And
no, he's a marshal.
I had High Noon in here, too. Yeah, yeah. To Sheriff Heck Tate, add Tom Robinson.
Oh, Lord, I know this.
Yes, you do.
It's not Shane?
And I don't think it's Shane.
It is not.
It's...
I knew that sheriff would throw him off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
To Sheriff Heck, do you know this other song?
Yeah, Tom Robinson.
Possibly.
I think. Okay.
I'm sure you'll
next
get it.
One.
I'm sure you'll get it now.
Pride is slipping away.
Yeah, to Sheriff Heck Tate and Tom Robinson add Boo Radley.
Oh. So then we know it's To Kill a Mockingbird.
To Kill a Mockingbird is exactly right for 6 points. Again, on a tough day, it was a good total for you guys, Lenore, but it wasn't enough. A 96-point day and a victory for this week's winners, Arne Reisman's team. Congratulations. That is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to Michael, Amy, and all the good folks at WRVO and the WRVO stations.
Thank you.
Who made it possible for us to get up here. Thanks again, folks. Thanks also to David Williams, Michelle Larrabee, and Syracuse University for being such good hosts. Thank you very much. Richard Scherr and Philip Salkind write the words. Antonio Oliart usually mans the meters, but this week it's Mike Angelillo. And Zach Moore is the AP with the get up and go. And once every few weeks, we remind you that this show is best when we get your questions, when we get your comments, and most of all, when you show up. Thank you, Syracuse, for showing up. See you next time.
Support for Says You at Syracuse comes from the good folks at Syracuse University, the WRVO stations in Syracuse and Oswego, and the Genesee Grand Hotel, where Says You stays in Syracuse and on the web at GeneseeGrand.com. You can hear Says You again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at SaysYou.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high-quality copies available. Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says You, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
The Metro Emergency Communications Center reminds you that 911 is for life-threatening emergencies only. If you call 911 by mistake, never hang up. All hang-up calls must be returned, which ties up 911 resources. To avoid calling by accident, lock your cell phone keypad and never store 911 on speed dial. In Davidson County, 862-8600 is the number to call for non-emergencies.
This is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.